Part 80. 50 wrote down some addresses and phone numbers for us for his business and home, which we already had, as well as the address and phone number here. The phone was on the kitchen wall. "We'll have to keep a log so we can pay for our calls," I said. "Not unless you're doing long distance. Local calls are free. Well, part of the monthly bill." "Well, we could contribute to that." 50 also sketched a map and marked a couple of useful places. We'd go out and explore, with the first priority the bank. The rent was going to be $75 a month. We weren't quite sure about things like heat and electricity or telephone. At my salary, the amount was not going to be a problem. The main difficulties would be communication and getting along cordially. I figured we could if Mart and Lise could. I'd talked to some of the Walcheren veterans and could possibly tell Mart a bit about that campaign once our skills in communication improved. 50 seemed to manage, though it was clear he broke a lot of rules of grammar and vocabulary. Part 81. We went out at about 9:45 and found the Bank of Montreal. After a short wait, all of us were brought into the manager's office. A Mr. Green. And explained our situation. We were able to set up an account for me. Mr. Green explained that we might want to have a joint account for Maud and I, or she could, with my permission, have her own. I sensed Maud's annoyance as this was said, but she said nothing. Mr. Green added that a slight problem with joint accounts was that they were frozen if one of the signatories died, which meant a family may be without resources in that situation. We decided to have separate accounts, checking for me and savings for Maud, roughly half each of our capital apart from that we knew came from Paul. "Can we get an account for our daughter?" I asked. "Yes. Usually there are limitations to prevent imprudent withdrawals, and usually a savings account."
"Paula?"
"Well, her name is really Paul and we think we'll go back to that here. Has had her own account in England, in fact about twice as much money as she was allowed to bring out."
"How interesting. Miss Newman, you must be quite mature for your age."
"But my name is Ronan, Paul Ronan. Ted and Maud adopted me after Aunt Matilda died. She'd brought me from France in 1940, and the Germans took my parents to the extermination camps."
Green blanched.
"I'm sorry to hear that. And I actually know a couple of people here named Ronan. It's a Jewish name. Are all of you Jewish?" I said Paul's mother was Catholic and so are she and Maud. I go to church with them, but can't seem to believe all the doctrine, but I'm happy to support them. And at some time I'll be interested to see if we can find connections to Paul's family here, though they will likely be distant relations. If my arithmetic is correct, Paul has been educated in English, but speaks French and is not far from being of school-leaving age. Green was quick to understand.
"Green can be a name from a variety of origins," I commented.
"I'm actually Jewish. I don't advertise it. The bank, like many Canadian institutions, have fairly strong male, white, and Protestant lines."
"Paul has probably grown up a lot quicker than most young women here. We'll set up a savings account for her. And you can leave me a message if you'd like to have an informal chat about what educational choices may be open to her. Quebec has a rather strange structure for schools." We thanked Mr. Green, who passed us to one of his staff, and we got our account set up, our bank books, and some Canadian money. The coin seemed small compared to our familiar British ones.
Part 82. Maud and I had got almost exactly $300 each for our £75. We each decided to have $100 in hand because we would be giving Mart $75 and I didn't know what I owed 50. Probably almost the same, since there'd been almost a month since he'd written about staying with Mart.
We saw a shop with a sign drug store. We looked in, then went in when we realized it was something like what we called a chemist's, indeed very like Boots. We took a look at the products and the prices, largely out of curiosity, but did see a rack of newspapers, and I bought a gazette. Further along the road, we saw a sign that said diner. We realized it was something between a cafe and a restaurant. We'd have to try it. It was a bit cool. We had walked to the St. Lawrence River. It was impressive. There was a bench and we sat down and unfolded the newspaper to get a quick look at advertisements. There was a fairly large one for a grocery shop called Steinberg's. Actually, it was a quarter page. We later learnt that once a week, often Thursday, there would be a full page advertisement. Even the quarter page caught Maud's attention. "They have butter and eggs and ham and lots," she said. "Ted, did Mr. Lapointe or 50 talk about ration books?" "Not specifically, but we were given temporary ration books at immigration last night. I put them in your handbag in the inside pocket." Maud said I must have been asleep almost. "Here they are. Well, they can stay there for now. But from what we had for breakfast, the allowances are much better than at home." Paul said, "But isn't this going to be home?" We all looked at each other, but said nothing. Somehow we'd brought with us the two small notebooks that I'd purchased at Smith's when I first arrived in Southampton. The one we used as a rent book only had one page used, so Maud and I had each used one of the notebooks when packing as a way to keep track of things. Paul had a slightly larger one somewhere. I took mine out and wrote down a question mark at the top of a page and then wrote rationing. "Ted, where's your fountain pen?" "They tend to leak with the pressure changes on aeroplanes, or should I say airplanes to get into the vernacular. So I cleaned it out, and also the one Agnes used to use. And I made sure the bottle of ink was double wrapped. I've several pencil stubs and my pen knife. Perhaps you didn't notice that I'd emptied and cleaned the pen in your handbag. I forgot to tell you. And I have straight pens plus Aunt Matilda's fountain pen, but we combined the ink with Ted's," Paul said. "I'll use pencils. I have a couple and a sharpener. You could have Agnes one if you wanted. It might fit your hand better than the one your aunt left, which I think is large and probably her husband's," I said. "I'd like that," Paul said. Part 83. We came back to the house on 25th and I gave Mart $75, which she seemed to appreciate. Then we spent some time with trying to work out how we'd pull the cooking and cleaning. Between Paul, our very impoverished French and an old French-English-English-French LaRousse, we came to an agreement to set up a weekly roster of tasks, baths, shopping and a housekeeping fund. We would put in 60% of the food and supplies since we were three of the five bodies in the house. When we asked about fuel, we were told compris, which was most welcome. But there was something about snow and a shovel that I'd have to ask 50 about. As I thought about him, Mart said 50. "He say you in Belgique?" I replied in French, "Yes. Antwerp. Anvers." And after, I was in the Netherlands. Sad. Henri died there. "Paul, how do you say a causeway?" She had to look it up. Then I said, "Mart, I have friends who were part of the Battle of Walcheren Causeway." She responded in French, which I was able to grasp, "Then you understand. Also, 50 told me your wife and daughter were hit by a flying bomb. And that Maud lost her husband on the battlecruiser Hood and her daughter in a road accident at the end of the war. And Paul had no more family due to the Nazis. We are all the poor survivors." Strangely, we were starting to understand each other already without translation. no doubt we'd have some misunderstandings. Let's hope minor. We had a sandwich. Some sort of luncheon meat, but hearty and not cut so thin it was transparent as in England. I almost thought as at home again. Then I telephoned Gerard Lapointe to tell him we'd arrived all right. Ted, I think it best if you start on Friday rather than Monday, since it's the first of the month and we'll simplify the accounting, but why don't I pick you up at 8:30 tomorrow morning and you can come in and be introduced and we can get most of the paperwork out of the way. Bring your documents in case we need to note them. We actually have a photostat machine if we need it. And once the bureaucracy is out of the way, we can get you set up so you hit the ground running on Friday. That would be good. And the couple of days will let us get organized. It seems that my friend 50, that's Lawrence Lorimer, his initials led to the nickname in the Air Force, did us a huge favor in finding accommodation for us. Right now housing is awkward. Will the sharing a house work? I hope so. It may or may not help that we have a lot in common with losing family members in the war. We'll have to see, but I'm optimistic. Good. Good. You'll probably have lots of questions. Take a bit of time to sort out. But you've not been here 24 hours and seem to be getting along. Yes. We went to the bank and have accounts and got our allowed number of pounds converted. Oh. Even better. We pay salaried staff by check. And, by the way, bring receipts for your expenses so far. We won't be able to pay you for the Merlin until it's received and signed off by the engineering team, unfortunately. I think we'll be all right unless my pay is delayed by more than a month. Then things could get a little tight, I said. All the more reason to get things in progress tomorrow. See you at 8:30. Since the telephone was in the kitchen, I only had to tell Maud a couple of the details. Part 84. Maud, Paul and Mark went out shopping. I decided to stay and unpack our things. We'd rather tumbled into bed and then this morning wanted to get the money sorted out. There was a built-in closet in our bedroom, which overlooked the street. The trees were mostly bare, but I noticed a few leaves. Some were bright red. Maple leaves. Unusual that. Or unusual to me. I found my bottle of ink and my pen and filled it. I had Agnes' pen in my tin box, which I'd brought in my suitcase. It would be useful for our passports and documents. I filled Agnes' pen too and put it on the little table in Paul's room. Funny how we'd gone back to her real name. That was how it was on the passport and other documents anyway. I transferred all the things that could be hung up on hangers to the closets in both rooms, though some of Paul's things were in her bags and I'd let her do those. Mart had left us enough hangers. Santa's in French. Which was thoughtful of her. It must be difficult to have a bunch of strangers move in. It was difficult to be the strangers. And messing around in two languages. We'd adapt. Paul already had once, and I wondered whether she found it comforting to hear French again. Have to ask her. There was a chest of drawers. Was it commode? And I decided we'd use the top drawer for personal items, then have one each of the other three for Maud, then me, and the bottom one we'd discuss later. I found myself putting Maud's knickers and bras and stockings in the drawer. I realized that I didn't even know what Canadians used in English for knickers. Panties perhaps. Smalls probably not. I put my collar and cuff studs box in the top drawer. For some reason I got a sense that separate collars weren't as common here in Canada. Have to ask 50, but if I thought about it, I can't remember seeing him with such a garment. There were a lot of differences, and they'd take some getting used to. No doubt the accumulation of those would be upsetting and we'd need to be careful to avoid letting such things get us down. The other side of things was that life looked to be immensely easier here. There was still rationing, but it was nothing like as stringent as we'd got used to in England. And the advertisements in the Gazette suggested that there was more, and more variety, available. This morning's eggs and bacon, for example, though it seemed the bacon might be rationed, but a quite large ration. I picked up the Gazette that was on the bed. There were classified ads, and I turned to the apartments for rent. There seemed to be none that were not shared somehow. And $75 was more or less in range. Apartments wanted offered up to double that for private apartments. So we might have to wait to get our own space. Well, it might be helpful through the first period so we could learn how to live here so we knew how the houses worked for electricity, heating, and plumbing. The suitcases and kit bags, at least mine and Maud's, were empty. I folded each kit bag and put each inside a suitcase, then slid the suitcases under the bed. I heard the front door and voices. The women were back, so I went down to see what they had brought back. Maud said, "There you are. We learnt a lot. There's quite a difference in what is available from what we're used to, and different products in some cases. And the ration amounts of things still rationed are quite generous." I'd noticed the refrigerator before, but now that things were being put away, I realized how big it was. Refrigerators were rare in England, and tiny by comparison. I guess the word would be similar, but probably mangled the pronunciation in commenting in French that it was a big refrigerator. Mart replied in French, "No. It's more or less normal. But we had the good luck that Henri replaced the icebox in 39. She used the word glacier, and we asked what that was. In French she explained, "A chest cooled with ice. You have to get a delivery 3 or 4 times a week." "Oh, an icebox," Maud said. "We rarely had those in England except in some of the big country houses perhaps." "So, did you make some plans for dinner?" I asked. "Tonight we'll have a stew, and, since we've not had the chance for some years, a treacle tart. But here it's called tarte au sucre, but with the rationing, we're going to use maple syrup from Mart's brother's farm. I couldn't see golden syrup. But there's some decision still to be made about using the breadcrumbs. I think we'll make 2 small pies and try the recipes separately. I couldn't find custard powder either, but Paul had learnt that it's made with cornstarch and a little turmeric for colour, so we can do that, and Mart got the milkman to leave plenty of milk." Paul had gone up to her room, and I heard noises that I guessed were unpacking. When she came down she said, "Ted. Thank you for the pen. It writes beautifully. Can I have a sheet of paper and an envelope to write to my friend Judy in Southampton and tell her about our journey?" "Of course, and we'll have to find the post office for you so you can get a stamp to send it." I put the writing paper and envelopes. They're in the leather writing compendium. In the top drawer of the chest of drawers. Just make sure we know to replenish the supply so we don't run out, and there's a little folder thing for stamps, but we'll need to have some for Canada, some for England by sea, and some air mail ones. For Christmas cards, we'll have to do something almost right away, since they'll go surface mail. "I hadn't thought of that," Maud said. "What's that?" Mart asked in French. Paul explained the issue of sending Christmas cards early. Mart nodded. She was making the pastry for the pies. Maud was watching while making some breadcrumbs from some leftover toast crusts by rubbing them against a grater. There was a small discussion on how to make the syrup for the pies, mostly concerning the proportion of sugar to thicken the maple syrup. It wasn't at all an argument, more a collective questioning. Eventually it seemed that roughly equal parts by volume. Here cooking seemed to use volume in cups rather than weight, and Mart had a very nice looking glass one that had a scale on the side and measured up to 2 cups or 16 ounces or. How could this be? 1 pint. In French I asked, "Mart. Is a pint equals 16 ounces here? In French, she replied, a yes. For Americans. But here, officially, it's 20. Particularly for beer. Otherwise the men complain a lot. Maud said yes, I forget where I heard it. Possibly on the BBC. That the Americans say a pint's a pound the whole world round, which is clearly silly. Part 85. That evening we had a stew supper followed by the treacle tart au sucre as it came to be called. 50 and Denise joined us, and they brought some beer. I found it thin but drinkable. The cooperative effort on the supper was a success. By trying the two different forms of the tart, with and without breadcrumbs, the verdict was that the breadcrumbs allowed it to be less sickly sweet. Denise, in a mix of French and English, made this observation. Maud responded, but I think the maple syrup, a rabelais, gives a very special taste compared to golden syrup, which I think is just a form of dissolved sugar. The Canadian contingent reserved judgment on custard. 50 said probably best with whipped cream when it's available, and the English party seconded the suggestion. During the meal, I raised the question of schooling for Paul. 50 said he'd gone to the Protestant schools through to school leaving. Denise, mostly in French, said she had managed 9 years, but that a lot of Quebec girls got less than 7. That did not seem a good omen for Paul's education. Mart made a comment that I didn't quite understand completely to the effect that she was a good Catholic, but the church was too insistent that they controlled the lives of everyone, and that it was single men deciding how women would live. At least I think that was the message. Liz looked uncomfortable. 50 explained that there'd been a bit of an argument with the local priest, who implied Mart should lean on Liz to enter the convent. Liz thought she wanted to become a nurse, but that career needed more and more some formal education. The church thought nursing should be the role of nuns, as it had been historically, but medicine was becoming more and more scientific. How do you feel, Paul? I asked. All my school was in England. In English. My French is fine when I'm talking, but I've only written it with Tante Mathilde. She laughed. I just slipped back from calling her Aunt Matilda. So you think you might do better in an English school? Maud asked. I think so. We need to find out what is needed and where I could go. Though I'm Catholic and fairly devout, I don't like the idea of the church intruding on the lives of young people. Religion should be something that one wants, not something imposed. Maud and Mart seemed to be on the same page. Mart asked what Maud had said, and nodded when it was explained in French, the priest is going to complain, certainly. Well, we'll have to do what we can. Possibly resurrect Paul's Jewish side. Maud surprised me when she said this. Part 86. My notebook now had schooling, post office, and bus along with rationing, but the last was now stroked out, since Maud thought she had enough understanding of how things worked. I added library. It would be sensible to have access to some information resources. Maud and Paul were going to look into that today while I was at TCA. Gerard picked me up in his car as arranged. He had what he said was a 1939 Ford Standard sedan. Large, but only 2 doors. After I'd answered the standard "How are you getting on?" question, I asked him if he had any advice on schooling for Paul. I got more or less the same story as from 50 and Mart. I'd see about talking with Mr. Green. He likely had a different perspective. The morning was mostly taken up with various documentation and other issues. However, I did get paid. In cash? For the train, hotel, and taxes. For the train and hotel I had documentation. The rest was on a per diem basis, which was for a Canadian standard and actually gave me more than I expected. I had to sign that the claim was true and honest, etc., but came away with some more money. With Gerard busy, I was assigned a young man who it turned out would be one of my assistants. Brian O'Neill was about 18. He said he'd missed having to decide how he felt about conscription. When I asked what he meant, he said that he was talking about the conscription crisis. I let that slide. I realized I knew very little of the local political and social currents and had better inform myself. Library was definitely going to be important. As we walked from the staffing office where I'd filled in lots of forms, including one for a security check that hopefully my military discharge will satisfy, they made a photostat. I asked Brian where he'd gone to school. I went to the High School of Montreal. It's considered pretty good around here. Possibly could have gone to university, but my mom's a widow, not from the war though. The pay here is better than average. I asked about using the bus, since I'd need to get here and back home. It appeared one could put money in a fare box next to the driver, or a ticket. The tickets were cheaper, but you purchased a strip in advance. Trams worked pretty much the same way. Brian introduced me to the team I'd have. Himself, a young woman clerk typist called Janice Armstrong, and a man of possibly 55 or 60, Remy All. I told them I'd be starting Friday and hoped we'd get along well together. My office was partitioned off the square room that was supply and logistics, and was for desks and lots of filing cabinets. I asked Remy if he had time to show me the filing system and he agreed. It was in good shape, at least as far as it went, and I said so. When I asked him, he said he'd been with TCA since the start and it had been a good job. Clearly he knew the ropes. There was something bothering me. Why didn't they just promote Remy? What happened to my predecessor here? I asked as innocently as I could. He went to TWA. His wife didn't like Montreal. She was American. I'm surprised they didn't offer you the job. It's costing them a pretty penny to bring me in. You're English. That's it, was the answer in French. I answered in French, that's not fair. I knew the expression somehow. Not your fault. This in English. No, but I can be careful to avoid making the situation worse and to make this unit as good a place to work as possible. Even though any manager should, some do not. It will be appreciated by all of us, myself especially. Part 87. I took the bus home. Yes, it had better be at home or I'd get into a funk and want to be back in England. Then we'd all be the poorer in so many ways. Brian's description of the bus was fine. I got a couple of strips of tickets. I noticed there were different coloured ones, then when I was seated saw a notice that gave the prices and they mentioned that there were ones for adults, students and children. Paul would travel for less. It was about 3 when I got in. My key worked. Maud and Paul each had one too. The house was quiet and I thought the women were out, but when I came up to the bedroom, Maud was lying on the bed reading the Gazette for the day. You're back. Did it go all right? She asked. Yes. Fine. I even got our expenses money. A bit over actually, because they work on a flat rate per diem for meals and incidentals and Canada is more expensive. And I took the bus back. Got some tickets which are cheaper than cash. But Paul will need to get some student ones, I think, once she's in school. Yes, I had a chat with the librarian. Good. You found it. Yes. We need some sort of proof of our address. Typically a bill or something like that. We'll have to think. But that's only to sign books out. We can still use the library. I had to fill in a whole lot of forms today about tax, so maybe a letter will come that way. Are they as bad here as in England? If you mean in rate of tax, I think not. But I'm sure there's bureaucracy. It was implied that there's both Quebec and Canadian offices, so on that front maybe worse. We'll have to see. Maud said it's an awful lot to take in. I agree. But what is possible for us to have here should be very good once we get settled. The first few weeks will likely be the most awkward for us. I think Mart is rather where you were last winter. And Liz is so quiet, I don't know quite what to make of her. I don't think she quite understands that Henri. Her father. Will never come back. What's Paul doing? I asked. She was going to read. We bought Le Devoir so she can get more familiar with French. I don't think Mart has a newspaper, and even on the wireless. I guess I should say radio. She doesn't listen to the news. Possibly we should get a radio for up here. I'm sure our tastes are different, and I don't want to ask her to change station for us. Are they expensive? Maud asked. We'll have to look. You have the newspaper, after all. Here's an ad for one at about $27 at Morgan's department store. Let's give ourselves one for Christmas. Not necessarily that one, but we've some time to look around, I added. Yes. But to change the subject, I'm thinking we need a chair or two in here. I don't want to be in Mart's way downstairs. I think we'll get along better if we can have some time to ourselves. That doesn't mean I don't like her, because the opposite is true. Yes. Something like the wingback chairs. Pity we didn't ship them, Maud said. Have to see what's available here. Part 88. On Thursday morning, I telephoned Mr. Green at the bank at 9:30. I figured that it would be better to call before opening. When I said I wanted to leave a message, I was told I could speak to him directly. Good morning, Mr. Green. It's Ted Newman. I wanted to take up your offer to discuss Paul's schooling with you and was going to leave a message to ask when it would be convenient. Could you join me at the Snowden Deli on Dakery at 12:30 on Sunday? I'm going to be meeting a fellow named Nate Ronan then. It seems we could achieve two goals at once. That's most exciting. Thank you. Yes, we'll be there. Can you give me the address? I'll have to look in the telephone book since I usually just go there. Ah, here we are, 5265 Boulevard Dakery. See you there. Yes. Thanks, I said, but he'd rung off. Part 89. We spent Thursday window shopping in downtown Montreal. We looked at some winter clothing and boots for each of us and noted what we liked and the prices. We did buy our own French-English dictionary for Paul, as we felt she would need it. Her old dictionary was French only, and very tattered. And we got to know the city a little. We also went in Woolworths on St. Catherine and got 2 dozen Christmas cards. That would be an activity this evening. While we could only think offhand of about 12 recipients, there's always someone else that you remember later. Maud said she would get stamps tomorrow. In the late afternoon before supper, we made a grocery list with Mart, using the advertisements in the Gazette and La Presse, which we bought for Paul to read. With 5 of us, the quantities were larger. It was also clear that when Maud would cook, the choices would be different. This could be an issue, but seemed more likely to simply widen the food perspective of all. While we three adults were sorting out the shopping list, Lise and Paul were cutting into a pumpkin. In England, I don't think I'd ever seen this melon-like fruit or vegetable. "Say Halloween," Mart said. In our fractured French, we explained that it was new to us, since it was a Scottish rather than English celebration. However, we found the resulting Citroën de Halloween with a candle inside to light up his macabre face quite interesting. Later we learned that this was Jack O'Flanton in English. I was disappointed I could not join the Friday shopping as I wanted to become familiar with products and prices. Later I realized shopping was very different from England, and being able to select the vegetables from the pile meant none of the bruised or misshapen ones. The Barrow boys in the markets always had a good selection at the front of the Barrow, but always took items from the rear when giving you a requested item. And they insisted that you not touch the produce. Friday was a meatless day, and apparently by government decree as well as Catholic tradition. Today was going to be tuna casserole. That would be new to us, but it was apparently popular here. It turned out that we enjoyed it, and it was a dish tolerant of variation and, moreover, useful if time of eating were uncertain. I'd started work this Friday, which was November 1st. After dinner, when Mart and Liz had gone out to visit a neighbor, Maud, Paul and I talked of fish and chips, and wondered where they could be had. They seemed to be unknown here. Surely not. We'd have to ask around. "Of course, we are almost 1,000 miles from the ocean," I said. "Really? That far?" "But the ships come here," Maud said. "Think of a very, very, very long Southampton water. Actually, the St. Lawrence here is fresh water, I think," I said. Paul jumped in. "Actually, at the Île d'Orléans, just east of Quebec, is where the salt and fresh water meet." I wondered where she had read that. "That explained some of the lines on the plimsoll mark on ships," I mused. "Salt water is more dense." Paul asked what a plimsoll mark was, and did it have to do with shoes. "No. Nothing to do with what they call sneakers here. I saw some in Eaton's. It's a mark on the side of ships to show when they are fully loaded." "The supercargo?" "The man who looks after loading. It's supposed to make sure the ship doesn't ride lower than an appropriate level on the plimsoll mark, which has lines higher on the hull for hotter, fresher water." After Maud and Paul got groceries Friday morning, they had smelled baking and, following their noses, found a small shop that advertised and was clearly producing bagels. They didn't know what they were, but bought half a dozen. Unable to resist, they each munched one going down the street, then Paul went back for another half dozen, so they had some to share with Mart, Lise, and me. I could imagine they tasted even better hot. I was tired after my first day at work, but it had gone well and we had started to consider how to include the parts for the forthcoming North Stars. We wanted the system fully organized before the first one was delivered from Canadair. Thinking of Canadair, I'd phoned Michael McPhee and we chatted about developments. Their facility I had learnt was over at the Cartierville Airport. I'd need a car to get there, and wasn't yet sure how that was arranged, so we made an indeterminate future meeting promise. Part 90. We walked all over the mountain on Saturday during the day, despite the sporadic rain. It had rained on Friday too. In the evening we went to the cinema. Correction, movies. We offered to take Lise, but she wasn't sure she'd understand, and besides, she and Mart were going to visit a friend in Outremont and have dinner there. That we were on our own for supper was actually helpful, as Paul and I had a little present for Maud. It was her 35th birthday. And now she looked that age, not the tired and aged woman who rented me a room last February. Paul had found some small cupcakes at a bakery and managed to make some tiny candles by melting some candle wax around some string. Just one on each cupcake, and they burned rather unevenly, but I brought them in quickly to the room that had the big table where we were eating. and we gave Maud a locket I'd found at the crater of my old house. It wasn't one I recognized, so may have been lost by someone other than Agnes or Peggy. It was open and the hinge was bent and the chain broken, and I only found it when I dug up the raspberries to transplant. It was lurking beside one of the canes. The raspberries had given us some fruit in the summer. A bit of brightness against the grey. In fact, the garden had done rather well for us and improved our meals immensely. I'd fixed up the locket at work at Supermarine with a bit of advice from one of the machinists who I knew had a lot of extra skills. Paul and I had had an extra copy of photos of Jeremy and Jenny made, and we put them in the locket in anticipation of Maud's birthday. When we gave it to Maud, she was a bit weepy, but it was clear she liked it. I've a bit of Jenny's hair. I'll put it behind her photo. Thank you both for this. At the pictures? I guess we should say movies now. We saw Brief Encounter with Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard. It was a good film, but perhaps not the best choice for us at that moment, given it deals with difficult choices. On the other hand, we were starting to know our new city. And we were together, we had a roof over our head, I had a job, and we would. Of this I was sure. Find our way, though I was beginning to realize it would be different from the path I had imagined. Differences could take you by surprise. Coming out of the movie, there was a policeman standing on the corner. Just a cop on his beat. But I found that the gun on his belt to be a shock, even after all the guns and bombs of the last few years. In England, coppers didn't carry guns. It was a sort of strange honor system that almost all of the crooks respected too. Here was clearly different. Part 91. Today there was wet snow. A lot, but it melted on hitting the ground. The Snowdon Deli was an interesting restaurant, if it could be called that. We found Mr. Green outside and he ushered us in and we found a booth. Booths were new to us, with the leatherette benches and the smooth tables in what we learned was called arborite. I recommend the smoked meat sandwiches, Green said. However, before we could order, one of the men behind the counter came over and said to me, "Don't I know you from somewhere? I'm Joe Morantz, by the way. My brother and I set up this place when we got back from the war. I'm Ted Newman. And you do look familiar. Oh. I remember." At the same time, so did Joe. We both said Etienne's Square. Loudly enough that other patrons looked at us. So did Maud, Paul, and Green. Joe said you held that Belgian guy's head out of the water so he didn't drown while I and some woman got that light post off his legs, then we carried him up the street to where an army medic was trying to see who he could save. Yes. Do you think that man survived? I asked. Dunno, but we did all that we could. Yes. I'm afraid it still gives me bad dreams, I admitted. Yeah. Me too. I didn't see the bomb go off. Came up 10 minutes later. I was right behind the convoy. Saw more than I wanted to. Well. I'd better get back behind the counter or there'll be unhappy customers, but leave me your address and phone before you go. And your checks on the house. Maybe we can catch up sometime when this place doesn't need my full attention. Ted and Joe were witnesses to a V2 strike on Teniers Square in Antwerp in autumn 1944, Maud said after he had gone back to his place behind the counter. There was a convoy of vehicles going through when it blew up and many were killed and injured, and a water main broke so the street flooded. I can understand the horror, Green said. I miss serving because I'm actually blind in one eye. The glasses tend to mean people don't notice that I can't see out of the left one, and it looks more or less normal. Ah, here's Nate Ronan. Hi there, Zach, said a man in his 50s who had come in and was standing beside the table. wiry, balding, with hands that clearly worked on something or other. He shook hands with Green. We were all introduced and Ronan sat beside Green, while the three of us took the opposite side of the booth. In England it would have been a squeeze, but these booths were quite large. A waiter came and we all ordered smoked meat sandwiches. Morden Pole asked for tea, Green, Ronan and I coffee. The minor drama with Joe Morantz was recounted for Nate, then the story of how we came to adopt Pole. By this time, we had our sandwiches, which for those of us who had experienced wartime meat shortages were quite unbelievable. Maud said, I keep expecting the police to arrive and arrest us for black market food. But these are so good. The approval was reflected all round. Nate said, I'll have to ask around, but I think Pole's father is a second cousin of mine or something like that. Actually, it really doesn't matter these days. Like Ted and Maud, we've lost people, and we'll just make our families out of those of us who are here. I don't know how much Pole wants to learn about her Jewish heritage, but I'm sure we can find people to provide information for her. I really don't practice the rules, nor go to synagogue. But I'm hooked into the community. And if you need a suit, or need a suit altered, I'm a tailor. Green said the other reason we're here is to talk about schooling for Pole. She went to a Catholic primary school in England and would be starting what we call grade 8 in a secondary school there. So you speak French pretty well, but all your schooling was in English, right? Nate asked. Yes, said Pole. I find it hard to read La Presse or Le Devoir, but I think I should read them to improve my language. I only used to write with Aunt Mathilde when we wrote to my parents, but that stopped in 1942 when I was about 8. And in any case, she would help fix my grammar and spelling. I said, we've got the impression that the French schooling is not very well suited to help young people in modern life. Green said, I hope I'm not showing prejudice, but I think that the Ultramonts, those who believe Catholic education is the sole route to maintain French-Canadian values, are mistaken. They even veered in recent years toward support of Nazism. But for Pole, there is a serious issue of whether pursuit of French via the French schools here is worthwhile. That is, if looked at without any reference to language, is the education a good one? It may be more sensible to get as good an education as possible, then pursue French afterwards, possibly in France. And what opportunities are there in the Protestant system? Maud asked. Nate said, if it's more or less an English or maybe Scottish system. There is a Jewish people's school, but it doesn't cover high school, so the Jewish kids go to the Protestant ones and recite the Lord's Prayer anyway. They do a lot of Anglican ritual, but don't seem to push a religious line outside of that. I think some English-speaking Catholics send their kids there because otherwise their chances of good jobs are limited. Green added, if the priests know you're Catholic, you may get some fuss from them, but I don't think they can do very much about it. There is the Loyola High School, but I'm almost certain it's not for girls. It's kind of the feeder school for Loyola College, which is for English Catholics. I think it grants degrees through an affiliation with the Université de Montréal. Most Anglos go to McGill, of course. I said, I can claim to be Church of England if we need. Is that called Anglican here? Yes. Anglican Church of Canada, Green acknowledged. I said, I'll still support Maud and Pole in whatever religion they follow. Well, as long as it espouses caring for all and leading a good life. World would be a better place if more people felt that way, Nate said. Despite Joe Moran's offer of a free lunch, we left enough to cover the bill. Or should it be check? Part 92. Maud decided to simply go with Pole to the High School of Montreal. Perhaps this rather direct approach was the reason that Pole started there the following Wednesday. The girls' section of the school was separate from that of the boys. Pole quickly learnt how to get there by tram. I mean streetcar. And by the end of the week was starting to fall into a routine. The school followed a 12-grade system, and Pole, based on her age and past schooling, was put into grade 8. Her teacher gave her a list of things to read and actually lent her some materials. When Pole mentioned that she was trying to get a library card, the teacher, a Miss A. Rutledge, had the list of remedial reading typed and sent by post addressed to Maud and I with reference to Pole Ronan. A form of identification that got all of us library cards. I very quickly recognized that Pole worked very hard each evening with the remedial study. She worked out a schedule in her notebook and was going to grind through it. Her tenacity both surprised and inspired me. Maud and I looked in the Gazette and found a desk lamp. It wasn't cheap, but we got it so Pole wouldn't try to read in the imperfect light of a single central bulb in her bedroom. Mart was impressed, too. In French she said, Pole gives a good example. Liz is starting to work harder at her homework. Part 93. November 11th. Remembrance Day. TCA was going to start work at 1:30 in the afternoon, except for Brian, who manned the office in case something critical was needed. Our four-person team was actually big enough to handle the supply of parts for the current fleet TCA had. The foul-ups? Americans would say snafus. Came from the mechanics grabbing the parts from the various parts stores at the landing airports where we did our own maintenance and not filling in the forms so we could maintain an inventory. At some airports, like Heathrow, we contracted with other airlines, so the inventory of parts was their problem, unless, of course, they didn't have something when one of our aircraft broke down. We needed some method to encourage better reporting. I was toying with ideas of parts racks that had good parts in one tray and bad ones in others. The trick would be to provide the right incentives that the number of total parts at the end of a shift had to match that at the beginning of it. These ideas were in my thoughts when I got ready to attend the 11 o'clock ceremony at the Cenotaph on Peel Street. Unfortunately, it was pouring rain. I had kept my uniform, but had used it for gardening, since the so-called blouse was warm. But it had been through rather a lot since I'd got it before Normandy, and it wasn't presentable for a ceremony and was in one of the tea chests as working clothing. I did have one of my two RAF badges on my raincoat. Besides the rain, it was cool enough on this day that I realized I'd better think of a better overcoat for Canadian weather, and I changed my mind about going to the ceremony. Maud and Pole had previously decided not to join me at the Cenotaph. They decided instead, with Mart and Lise, to listen to the ceremony on the CBC, actually the version with French commentary. I joined them and we listened quietly. Then I went out into the wet to catch my bus, which was on reduced schedule to add to the misery. With the wait for the bus, I arrived wet and bedraggled to the office. I was glad Maud made me some sandwiches, because I only arrived near to 1:30. Most of the office brown-bagged it anyway. Unlike England, most people ate their main meal at night. That actually suited us. And there weren't the works canteens of the UK. We could have found something in the coffee shop at the terminal building, but it was some distance from our office. Moreover, the cost of lunch there. It was, after all, an airport coffee shop. Would eat into money useful for other things. Part 94. On November 21st, I got a message at work that our chests had arrived and could be collected the next day. We would need to bring our shipping documents and a means of conveyance. 50 had already told me he'd lend me a truck and a driver, and we arranged I'd be picked up at 8 a.m. at home and get to work late. I told Remy to expect me sometime around 11 hopefully. Pole came with me, and I'm glad she did. I wrote a note for the school that there was an immigration issue to be sorted out. That was more or less true. The truck was let into the dockyard based on my showing the shipping documents, and we were told to proceed to a numbered doorway on the long dock shed. Inside, a customs agent looked at the documents and led us to the chests. "What's inside that one?" he asked. I'd fortunately numbered them and had a list. Saucepans, cutlery, eiderdown, blankets, curtains. "Let's check." He nodded to another man who had a crowbar and roughly popped off the top. There was the eiderdown. The agent pulled at it and discovered the bottom of a saucepan. "Okay," he chalked it. Then under his breath, "Encore un mot de tong lay," as he moved to another chest. Paul said in French, "Why damned English, sir?" He is truthfully English, but he adopted me after the Germans killed my parents in the extermination camps. And me, I am originally French. In French, the agent replied, "All right, dear, my mistake. Good luck here in Montreal." And he chalked the other chests. Part 95. The next day, Saturday, November 23rd, it was below freezing all day. Nevertheless, we had made up our minds and were going to buy coats and boots. I'd withdrawn $100 from the bank to make sure we had enough to buy what we needed. Between Eaton's, Morgan's, and other stores, we ended up spending a good deal of that. We rode the streetcar home with many others, all of us carrying several parcels. Maud and I had bought ourselves galoshes. In my case, I got some dressed ones as well as some that were more like boots and had felt lining too. I thought of getting some boots alone, but the overboots would be easier for the office. Because it was harder for the women, we got a pair of winter boots for Pole, who had been talking to Lise and saw what she used. We debated getting her a second pair, then decided to get one pair now, since it might be essential, but to look for bargains in the newspapers or in some of the smaller shops. We got Maud some overboots that fitted her low-heeled shoes that she had deliberately selected for today, she and Paul having had a conversation and show and tell with Mart and Lise. We'd definitely want to look for some true boots for Maud if we were going to be outside walking. The heeled overboots might keep the snow off her feet, but would not be good for walking far. Canadians seem to use their cars a lot. I found a nice hat for myself when Maud picked it up and said, "Ted, look at the ear flaps on this hat. Didn't have those in England. I'm going to get it." That prompted toques for the ladies, but we decided to each have one and decided to get them in matching patterns as a family winter uniform. We already had some woolen scarves from England. A little old and faded, but still functional. We got Paul a nice coat in a so-called high school pattern in wool, but with a lining, and we got me a moleskin coat with a lining, called sheep-lined, but very unlikely to be a sheepskin. This coat had some leather in the sleeves to keep out the wind. Selecting the size for Paul took some discussion. She was still growing, so we needed to allow for that, but also not have the coat so large that she was swimming in it. After a few had been tried on, we found one that had plenty of room but did not look like she was wearing a tent. A coat for Maud was our most difficult purchase. We looked at a fake Persian lamb coat for about $35 compared to the real thing at over 10 times as much. Maybe later I'd get her a fur. The look was nice, but while real fur was probably warm if the style allowed it to be closed against the wind, it was not clear that the fake fur would suffice in the Canadian winter. And with real fur, I'd heard that it had to be specially stored in summer and cleaned. Lots of extra expense. Before I bought the moleskin coat, I had tried on some Mackinaw ones, and Maud liked them a lot. "Why don't you try one on?" I suggested. "But they're men's coats. Let's see if there are women's versions." It turned out there were, but they were not as thick or well made. "It's not fair that men's things are so much better made and better suited to the outdoors," Maud complained. "So let us go back and, as I've suggested, try one on." The men's coats were too big for her, but Paul said, "What about a boy's coat? I saw some in Eaton's." Back we went and found one that was a dollar cheaper than either the men's or women's versions we'd seen, and it was solidly made. It wasn't as long as most overcoats. In fact, we heard someone call the length a car coat. "You may need slacks or tights when it's really cold," I said. "Yes. I think we should get a pair of tights each for Paul and I. Will you want long underwear?" "Let's get me one pair, but not the all-in-ones that we saw in the newspaper advertisement. I can't see myself with the rear flap." My two female companions laughed, but I think they would not have let me buy the old-fashioned undergarment. Eaton seemed to be as good a source as any for these items, which were our last purchase for the day. We had some gloves from England, but had plans to get some gloves and mittens at Woolworths or some similar store soon. That would be later. Now we went to the store restaurant on the 9th floor. "What a place!" Maud exclaimed. It had a high ceiling and Art Deco design with a large mural at one end. "Yes, quite a place," I agreed. We had to wait a few minutes for a table. Like others, we had a lot of parcels. Paul had a grilled cheese sandwich and a malted milk. She had heard about malted milk at school. I decided to have a hamburger. Very North American. I liked them, and could put on relish and ketchup or mustard. Maud chose a chicken salad sandwich. We both ordered coffee to drink. Here, what was called cream for coffee did not taste right in tea. We were adapting. Part 96. Monday, November 25th, a truck, I used to say lorry, delivered the Merlin from Nigel. I saw it come in, and later went over to the test area where it had been uncrated and put on a test stand. It looked to be in good condition, and I asked the head technician if all was in order. I thought for a few moments it was brand new. "Seems excellent, but we'll know in the morning when we run it up on the dynamometer." Thankfully, Nigel had done an excellent job, and the test was flawless. That Tuesday afternoon, I exchanged an invoice for £450 for a check for $1,800. I decided to take a taxi to the bank and deposited it. The taxi saved me waiting for the bus in the wet snow in Dorval, though I did have to walk home from the bank a bit carefully. To make up some of the time I'd taken off, I decided to work in the morning of Saturday, November 30th. I wanted to write up some ideas on how we might get better inventory records from the mechanics. However, we had almost 6 inches of snow. Well, it proved a test of my new clothing and boots, and I'd need to get used to the winter conditions. As it turned out, it wasn't all that difficult, as the street seemed to have been quickly cleared for the buses, and at the airport there were men shoveling to make paths between the buildings, even though there were few workers on duty in any of them, which were mostly similar to the one where I had my office. My task was a tricky one. A lot of managers try to make pronouncements that recording withdrawals from parts inventories are required, with the unstated threat of loss of job. However, true aircraft mechanics aren't that common. There might be half a dozen in, say, the province of Alberta, and they'll be in three cities. There will be helpers, but the key guys know that firing them is going to leave your airplane on the ground for quite a while. We needed a way to make it worthwhile for the mechanics to keep our information up to date. If a mechanic used a gasket and didn't record that it had been used, a plane might come in needing a new gasket and there would be none available. All the passengers and mail would be delayed until the part could be flown in. The mechanics needed to want to record what was used. But how could we do that? During the war, we had the muscle of the military discipline system. That didn't exist here. And, besides, the military invoked the concept of pain for not doing what was needed, rather than an advantage for doing it. The mechanics liked it when the parts they wanted were ready at hand and did not need to be flown in. In that sense, there was an incentive, albeit a rather loose incentive. However, there was perhaps an opportunity to ask the mechanics how we could structure things so it was really easy for them to report information to us. Something like putting tickets from parts and the equipment they came from onto a common form, for example with a stapler. I'd need to think how we could tweak the identification of aircraft and parts so we could track the information, possibly more information than we were keeping now. In the future, it could be important. There was some chatter at Supermarine about metal fatigue, and there had been cases where the tails of Hawker Typhoons fell off. I'd actually been around in the Netherlands when one of those happened in 247 Squadron. We also needed to know what engine or similar large unit or other aggregation of parts was being repaired. Could we use some sort of pre-prepared tickets to help us? But there would be situations with parts that were multiples. For example, the spark plugs. It would be important to know if particular ones failed, like the front or rear plug more than any other. It might be that we could stratify the parts and treat different types in different ways. It was not an easy issue. I would need to talk to the mechanics and learn what they would be willing and unwilling to do. I suspected that chaps with greasy hands didn't like to touch documents and put oily thumbprints on the forms. Was there a way to get the information recorded without them having to touch paper? Lots to think and talk about. Part 97. See Rushworth. Solicitor. Woolston, England. November 30, 1946. E. Newman, Esquire. 687 25 E Avenue. Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Dear Mr. Newman, thank you for forwarding your address by air mail. It turns out to be timely, as our inquiry about reconstruction procedures had elicited a response from the council asking if you would be willing to sell your parcel of land in Bitton. They have been rather cautious and not suggested an amount, but I am relatively sure £100 would be possible. If you wish, I can act for you if you can get a witness signature to the enclosed document allowing me to act for you. There is a place to put the minimum amount you would be willing to accept. So you will not be surprised, my fees and disbursements will likely be somewhere between £7 and £10. As you are aware, funds cannot easily be sent to you, but I can deposit monies to your bank account here, as we have already discussed. Indeed, we have your bank information on file, and you told me that Mr. McKenzie had been informed. My sincere best wishes for you and your family. Yours sincerely. C. Rushworth, Solicitor. Part 98. It was just gone 10 p.m. and Maud and I were in bed slightly earlier than we might have been. I offered my arm and Maud scooted in. Love you, I said, kissing her forehead since it was the only kissable surface. I love you too, Ted. It's been quite a year for us, hasn't it? Still 2 months to the anniversary of our meeting. We haven't even been married 6 months. Yes. A lot's happened. I hope you're not disappointed. No, not disappointed at all. A bit. I don't know, anxious. So much new, and I'm not sure what I should be doing. You mean that since it's Mart's house, you aren't really a housewife, and figuring out who should do what isn't easy? Yes, I guess that's it. I've wondered if I should look for a job. Mart and I get along well, and I'm picking up enough of French words and expressions that I think I'll manage all right that way, but we don't really need two of us in the kitchen preparing meals. It might be better under a different arrangement. Have you thought what you might do, or looked at any job ads in the paper? Not much. Ted, I wanted to make sure I'd talk to you first. Thanks. But I'm okay with you finding something to do that you find rewarding, either in money or otherwise.
Oh. I just used it okay?
Yes. I found myself saying a bien sir yesterday, and I wasn't talking to Mart either. I was in the library.
You know, Maud, I've no idea what you really used to do at Thornycroft's.
I worked for a part of the company that made some of the bits and pieces of the landing craft they built for D-Day and after. My job was to use measurements and calculate if the parts had the right strength. Things like the latches on the drop-down ramps.
So lots of arithmetic?
Yes. A couple of the engineers and a man from Southampton University College developed some templates for the different calculations, and we had some mechanical calculators, either Marchant's or Fassett's or Monroe's.
Was it interesting or just tedious?
A bit of both, I suppose.
Well, we'll have to see what might be on offer.
Yes. I may also look into doing some volunteer work to help DPs in case I don't find paid work. There's a lot in camps in Europe and talk some will be allowed to come here. Some of them will need help.
That would get you meeting people. Do you know where you can do that?
I got a few ideas at the library. I want to look into them before I jump in and then have to ease myself out if I don't like it.
Makes sense.
On another topic, are you okay with going to church at St. Ange with Mart like we do? The Latin means there's not so much we miss.
Yes. Though we may get some flack from the priest at St. Agnes about Pole going to the high school. But I think Pole is re-evaluating her Catholicism. She's asked if she can talk to Nate Ronan.
I'll go with her one day, though Saturday a lot of the Jewish business is close.
Maybe meet her after school and go then. She could also phone him. Here it's not costing extra like in England.
True. Hard to get my head around that.
At least the priest won't complain she's missed a holy day of obligation on the 8th, since it's Sunday.
Yes, I'm glad of that. Truthfully, Ted, I'm wondering about my own religious feelings. I like the community at St. Patrick's in Woolston, though I can see that if the Irish priests had got their way, it might be a lot like here, where the priest is kind of a local dictator. I like time to pray, and I like the liturgy. I can't get very exercised about different theological issues, though. Maybe, something like you, I don't have the gift of faith. But so far here I've not been to confession, in part because of the language thing, but also because it doesn't seem so important anymore.
There is a St. Pat's here, and it's an English church, but downtown.
Yes, I may look it up and go to confession there. I'll see if Pole is interested too, but I'll be sure to tell her she is free to decide.
Yes. We'd better keep trying to treat her as a young woman, not as a girl.
You know, talking of holy days, tomorrow is St. Nicholas, where we get the Santa Claus from.
Really?
Yes. The Dutch say Sinterklaas. It's when Dutch kids get sweets and presents, or when they did before the war. You'll remember I said there was a woman who wanted food for her kids.
The one who offered to sleep with you?
Yes. Part of the food I gave her was a bit of dolly mixture and barley sugar that somehow was on the lorries. 2 years ago tonight. Seems a lot further away.
Perhaps that's something to be thankful for, Maud said, easing out of my arm and rolling over then snuggling against me. In a few minutes, we were too hot, and I folded down the eiderdown.
Never would have thought it would be so much more comfortable here when it's freezing outside, I said.
No.
And the double windows seemed to stop the drafts.
Oh.
I got the sovereigns out of the curtains, speaking of drafts. They're in your tin box with the documents. Part 98A. Calgary, Alberta. December 2, 1946. Dear Ted. It seems you are getting on very well in Montreal. I'm glad to hear this. Canada offers lots of opportunities, but it is very different from England. I know Caroline and I found it took her some time to adapt and discover the beauty and comforts of the country. I, Joseph, have been busy with the changeover from streetcars, that is, trams, to electric trolley buses. We also have a number of more or less standard motor buses, but our fleet is pre-war, so we have a lot of maintenance, as well as some new buses on order. As you will have realized, Canada is very large. I'm hoping either we can get east or you west in the coming year. Caroline is going to put some news of the family over leaf, as I must run to a work meeting. Best wishes for Christmas and the new year. Joseph and Caroline. Part 99. Today was going to be a Christmas shopping day. That's how we referred to it, though in our little trio, we had decided that there was a $1.50 limit to spend on presents for each other. On the other hand, we were going to buy a radio for ourselves. We'd had a rather careful chat with 50 about how Christmas would take place, as we felt that we were, in many respects, intruders. It turned out Mart had talked to 50 as well, feeling the same awkwardness. She and Liz had been invited to the house of Denise's parents in Lachute, a town some miles away. 50 and Denise were going to go there too, which posed its own diplomatic issues, given that 50 was still waiting for his divorce. Denise had a number of siblings. We had some trouble working out all the names and relationships. And there were going to be mattresses and cushions all over the large farmhouse. They would all go to midnight mass, then have the Revelin meal that featured a meat pie called tortilla. Mart and Maud were going to make some, so we'd get to try it too, but I doubted we'd eat it at 1 in the morning. The Gagnons were concerned that we would be alone for Christmas, but we were actually relieved to be able to have a quiet Christmas, as we had found the last couple of months quite hectic, and a quiet day would be welcome. However, we did have a bit of a private celebration with 50, Denise, Mart and Lise on the 21st. The solstice. And we'd used the occasion to set up a Christmas tree. Just a small one, as there wasn't a lot of room. As part of this solstice celebration, Paul and Maud made some cheese straws and mince pies to complement the tortilla we would have as our savory course. A real transnational mixture of items, along with some gingerbread that seemed to belong to everyone and no one. We decided that we would give 50 and Denise the bottle of whiskey we'd got in London. The brandy we would keep for ourselves. But 50 had found us housing, and had helped us move the tea chests, and got us up and running in our new country. Liz had seen us writing letters and seemed very intrigued by our fountain pens. In the whole house when we arrived, there were just pencils and a couple of old straight pens. Possibly no ink. Paul saw a Waterman fountain pen at Eaton's for $2 and we got that and a bottle of ink and added in one of our fruit and nut bars. They weren't available here. Dommage. When shopping for the pen, we noticed the new Eversharp pens that didn't have a nib but used a ballpoint. These were pretty expensive. About as much as a regular week's wage. If they came down in price, they'd probably become more popular than fountain pens. A suitable present for Mart was a challenge. Though we'd been living in her house with her for over a month, we didn't really know her tastes. Maud said she's where I was when you arrived in Southampton last February. Emotionally frozen and running on automatic pilot. We've probably stirred things a little, and we've provided some measure of financial security for her. But we don't know what, if anything, would give her a particular joy. Liz said she used to go to shows with a folk singer called La Bolduke, who made a lot of recordings. You mean we get a radiogram, or what they often call a radiophonograph here, rather than just a radio, then get Mart some records. Yes. Would that be possible? They're rather expensive, and we'd have to figure out where to put it so Mark could use it. Then the radio part would not be usable by us. But the general idea is a good one. We talked some more, but at the end of the day had not found anything for Mart. Part 100. I bought a book for Mart, Paul said Wednesday night.
What did you get?
Maud asked. It's called Pieds Nus dans l'Aube, or Barefoot in the Dawn, by Félix Leclerc. He's a writer and poet and singer, except here they say chansonnier, which may mean he almost talks the songs. But Liz mentioned Mart liked his programs on Radio Canada, so when I saw the book in a small library. That's a bookshop here, and library is bibliothèque. I thought I'd buy it. I hope that's okay. It's only just come out. It's likely the best idea we've had yet, I offered, and in the event Mart was delighted with it. Part 101. We went to Mass on Christmas morning. It was less well attended than the usual Sunday Mass. We had heard that it was difficult to get a seat at midnight. It was snowing as we walked to and from church, and quite cold, but we had our winter clothing and boots and managed all right, though some hot coffee when we came back was welcome. Though we had planned to have our own Christmas dinner, using a quarter ham rather than a turkey, since we thought the latter too much for just the three of us, we'd had a telephone call on Christmas Eve from Nate Ronan. Paul had called him once, and they seemed to get on, chatting about where the Ronans came from in Eastern Europe. Nate asked if we had plans for the 25th. He didn't say Christmas. And we said we were going to have just the three of us. Hannah and I generally have a very quiet day. Our daughters are both married and live in New York City and Princeton, New Jersey. Why don't you come and have a meal with us? Let me check that Maud and Paul haven't planned anything. There was a moment when I put my hand over the telephone microphone, then I was able to respond yes. We'd very much like to. Can we bring something to contribute to the meal? I know there may be some dietary rules. As I said at the deli, we're not strict, but we avoid pork or shellfish. And for some reason suet, so mincemeat, Christmas pudding and such, which always smell rather delicious, Ronan laughed. We'll avoid those things, I said.